You're listening to an Amplify podcast.
Hello and welcome to Amplify. My name's Anika and today we've got a really, really cool show lined up for you. We've got some really cool individuals on a call, including my co-EP.
I'm Alexa. Yeah, we're super excited. And I guess I'll just talk a little bit about what we're doing today, which is so exciting for us. We're having a bit of like a panel discussion, but virtually, about kind of COVID-19 and education. So we have some really cool educators, people involved in the education sector, and students as well on this call, which will be really cool, and seeing all the perspectives on what COVID-19 has really meant for education and how things have changed. But I guess we'll do really quick intros of everyone, so if everyone just wants to say a little line, who you are, your name, and what you do in what capacity, I guess we'll go around and do that. So Ayushi, do you want to start us off?
Yeah. So, hi, my name is Ayushi Killen. I'm a board member at the Victorian Curriculum and Assessment Authority, the sort of youth representative on the board. Yeah.
Amazing. Nicola, do you want to go for it?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Nicola. I'm a registered teacher and I work with teachers around the country. We're helping them with primary science education mostly, so I get lots to do lots of fun things with teachers.
Awesome. And Andrew?
I'm Andrew. I'm in year 12 at the moment and I'm the school captain at South Oakley College.
Awesome. Well, we're so glad to have you guys on tonight. Thank you so much for listening in. Also, if you want to check us out on Instagram at AmplifySyn. And we're going to be podcasting this show as well as all the rest of our shows. So head to our bio and you'll be able to listen to the podcast, which is really exciting stuff. But should we get into our first track, Alexa?
I reckon we should. So this is our first track and we'll see you right after the song. Yeah. We hope you enjoyed that track and welcome back to Amplify on Spin. I'm Alexa.
I'm Anika and today we've got a really cool show coming up for you guys where we're joined by lots of people in the education system and we're going to be talking about all things COVID and school and the effects of COVID, which is really interesting from all these different perspectives. So we're joined by Nicola, Ayushi and Andrew who come from all different backgrounds regarding education. And we just want to find out, so today Daniel Andrews, well, this is going to be played in the future, but we're currently on the 7th of July. But today, Daniel Andrews spoke out about some regulations that he's put in place concerning more kind of strict lockdown measures for the next 6 weeks. And within that, he addressed the different regulations for schooling, whereby students studying VCE, that may be kids in year 10 to 12 will continue going to school, whereas all other children will stay home, I guess, and participate in home learning. And so this is obviously, as it did a few months ago, had a big impact on lots of kids around the state, I guess. And so we just want to know, yeah, what kinds of, Andrew, we might start with you as your year 12 student. So what kinds of impacts, especially being like a school captain of a school, what kinds of impacts have these changes had on you?
I guess for me personally, there's just a lot of uncertainty at the moment about the direction that we're heading in, especially with, as you mentioned, the recent announcement that Dan Andrews has put in place in terms of what the finish line actually looks like, where the finish line actually is now. Everything's just gone back up in the air, especially since right now we thought we were going at quite a nice pace. We thought everything was settled down now, and now things we kind of just need to start reconsidering where we're at the moment. And I think especially for VCE, in terms of making sure that we stay on track despite all this.
Yeah, definitely. And as like a school captain, have you found that, like, obviously your role has definitely changed. And how has your role kind of changed in terms of, I guess, that, and how has that kind of impacted, I guess, your role?
It's definitely different to what I've expected at the start of the year, pre-pandemic. But I guess in terms of my role, I've had the opportunity to make sure that to see how everybody's going. I've still kept up regular meetings with our student leadership team, making sure that when everything does return to somewhat normal, that we can start to prepare things for our school community to try and get things back on track to where they were before. Unfortunately, we have missed out on lots of things like our house athletics carnival. So trying to find alternatives for our students and staff that we can put together is also another thing that I've had the opportunity to do, and we'll hopefully get to do something when restrictions look a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely.
And I guess, like, on another note, like, regarding your learning, and obviously we did have kind of home remote schooling for a little while, do you reckon there's been a lot of disruption? And obviously, like, this is BC, it does feel like a really important year at the moment. How has that really impacted you?
I guess for me, it's just around, I guess going into an online platform has made it just a little bit less enjoyable for me. Every day feels the same. You wake up, you go on your laptop, you log in. That was during that remote learning period. And hopefully we don't have to go back to that again. So I do feel for those 7 to 10s that are returning back to online learning. And hopefully when this airs, things are looking a little bit better.
Well, Nicola, it's your role to, I guess, create resources for students, I guess, in with the intentions of making learning engaging. So how has kind of this period of time impacted you and your job, I guess?
Yeah, we support teachers around the state and around the country with engaging resources for students, like you said. And so before pre-pandemic, it was all, you know, classroom-based resources, classroom-based ideas and engagement. And so we had to quickly shift to creating something for teachers that can be really adaptable and flexible and find alternatives that will work for a range of situations. For example, we know, and you guys know, that in any class, there is a range of abilities that teachers need to cater for and a range of circumstances that students need to be catered for. And so that didn't change. But what was added is that teachers need to also cater for the differences in digital accessibility, the differences in the parents' time that they had available to give to the students to help them with learning. And so not only were we catering for a range of learning abilities, we were also suddenly catering for gaps in the digital, what they call the digital divide. So whether people had access to internet or not, did everyone in the home have a device or not, did everyone have time, how much time did they have in a parent's working day to support a student with their learning if that student needed that. So yeah, there's lots of flexible thinking and lots of creativity was required during that time of remote learning.
100%, lots of problem solving as well.
Yeah,
definitely. And we're going to tap into kind of, I guess, that equity, I guess, a bit more later into this session. But I guess when you're kind of creating resources, like now, as opposed to say pre-pandemic, what kind of mentality do you go in, like, into creating resources? Like what kind of mentality do you go into it with?
Well, whereas before we were speaking directly to the teachers so that they could supply resources to students, we were suddenly speaking to parents who have expertise in areas other than education. So we had to shift our language a bit so that it was more accessible to anyone with any literacy level or any expertise to access the resources so they could support their students at home. So we had that kind of mindset as well, but certainly we went into it with the making sure everything was equitable and accessible from a range of perspectives. So that were the two key drivers to creating resources and access.
Yeah, definitely. Amazing.
And I think, like, during, I guess you sort of touched on it, but like with everyone, it's been really important to be really adaptable during this kind of situation. And like adaptability is, like, almost one of the most important things because the situation keeps on changing, like, continuously. And Ayushi, with your role at VCAR, like, what sort of adaptations did VCAR kind of have to make? Could you give us a bit of a quick rundown?
Yeah, so at our role as board members in VCAR is primarily engaging in altering the curriculum and making changes to the curriculum, usually in 3 years in advance, okay? So the changes we make is quite a few years in advance. We change the curriculum. So when we start changing the curriculum for the new study designs, for example, in VCE, we do a year and a half of committee work, okay, to prepare for that. So you can imagine that going from this really robust system where we had a long time to discuss changes to suddenly being forced to make changes within the span of a few months, it was very difficult. And I think we also need to acknowledge that in this workforce, people had limitations. There was a lot of added work, but also there is a limitation of how much extra work people can do, especially when their mental health was affected. So we had to also take care of the people within VCAR and the workers there, because everyone's mental health was at stake and we didn't want to overload people. So it was balancing between all these different sort of balls that was quite hard for us. But I think once we started making those changes, one of the first changes we made was communication. So we started having weekly VCAR meetings with the board, where usually it's a consultation every few months or every month. So it was a quick change that we thought, because of the rapidly changing situation, it was very important that we kept in the loop. And because the board has such a diverse representation, so we have teachers, we have some Indigenous representation, and now sort of student representation, it was really important that we could bring all those sectors together in each discussion and make sure that we were not having sort of blind spots or people we weren't addressing. So we did try our best in that regard, but it was definitely not an easy time. And I think we learned that there's a lot of things we have to change to become a little bit more adaptable if these things happen in the future. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm in year 12 and so is Andrew. And so we're definitely kind of with, and even Alexa's in year 11. And so we're all kind of experiencing, I guess, the impacts of, I guess, what VCAR is kind of doing. You tapped into kind of like the process, I guess. Could you like elaborate on kind of the process that it takes to, I guess, change curriculum and all that kind of thing? Like say who like decisions need to be passed by and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, so as part of the board, you also have to be part, or board members are urged to be a part of certain committees. So the committee I decided to be a part of is the senior secondary, because I have the most experience in that area. So those committees deal with the curriculum in a VCE level, okay? So chemistry, maths, everything like that. So those changes usually even split off into the subjects, which we see as smaller committees. It's a very hierarchical structure. So when that does, we get that in the committee, we approve any changes, we talk about it, and then it goes to the board level where the final changes and alterations are made. So those kind of changes take time. We have very controversial discussions and everyone brings thoughts to the table. So that's why it takes quite a substantial time, like a year or so, before we roll out the next study design. So, you know, one of the changes we're thinking about is whether to extend this study design currently for the following years, because we've had limited capacity to be able to work on future study designs, as you can imagine, when we're trying to alter this one. So things like that, you know, have been current curriculum problems. Yeah.
Interesting. And like Andrew, like being a student, what kind of subjects are you doing? And have your subjects kind of changed all that much with the impacts of COVID this year?
Yeah, so the subjects that I'm doing at the moment are English, math methods, specialist maths, psychology, and food studies. And I think that there's been quite an interesting there's been some interesting changes with regards to the study designs, particularly around the maths. For both math methods and specialist maths. Specialist maths has a whole area of study removed, which I think a lot of students were quite happy with. And I think as well with all the other subjects, I think it's just been a really nice sort of thing to have to compensate for what's happened at the moment, particularly for students who are suffering from around their mental health, not going through the best moments right now, or if there are some equity issues, as we mentioned. I think the changes to the study design have been quite helpful in supporting a lot of students' journeys through year 12 this year.
Yeah. We did shorten the study designs for each subject, and there was committees to ensure that also what we shortened in year 12 and year 11, like unit 1 and 2 didn't impact then their year 12 next year. So it was difficult in that as well to ensure that there was this sort of fluidity in what we cut out. But it was a decision that was made to ensure, to take into account the disrupted learning that occurred this year for year 12s. And the whole thing with VCAR's role is to ensure that we give a VCE certificate that has, you know, integrity behind it. So yeah, there's no point giving a certificate that no longer has that meaning, that depth. So we really did try our best to ensure that. I know there was, we did keep also in the loop of any change, any sort of student perspectives and how the different sectors were reacting. So we had media updates every day, and we still get them, on what's going on and what sort of the buzzwords for today and what people are searching up. But things like completely removing VCE, which was quite a big discussion a while ago, was something we were aware of. But considering the role of VCAR, which is to ensure this certificate that has integrity and depth, it's a bit of a drastic change, honestly, to expect from an organization that legally is required to give you a certificate. It's hard though, because if I was in a student's perspective a few years back, you wouldn't have thought the amount of work that's been going into those changes. So, you know, flip side, I understand it's just students' frustration sort of coming out in their learning, but we can all only do our best. And I think we have tried our best, but definitely there are changes that we need to make in the future as well.
Yeah, definitely. That's really interesting. And just quickly, you spoke about curriculum changes, Ayushi. I'm just wondering, Nicola, so I know your role is to create resources, but do you have any kind of control over the curriculum, or did you guys have to make any changes in regards to that?
Yeah, the curriculum's a really interesting perspective to take in this conversation, because teachers are committed to delivering the curriculum in a way that their students can access it, learn it, and thrive within that framework. So I think it's really important to remember that teachers are working within that as well. As and you talk about changes, Ayushi, and how long things take to change in your environment. And when teachers are creating new things for their students or doing learning themselves, these changes and these changes normally take a really long time, as they should actually. But with this pandemic that happened, teachers and everyone were thrown into this rapid response kind of reactionary mindset for a little bit, because, you know, we were all at panic stations really. And so there were lots of things going on and influencing them, but teachers were always committed to delivering the curriculum. We don't have any control over that. There are inputs that available to us at the right time when the curriculum undergoes a change, but we are then obligated, I guess is the word, to deliver. So we the resources we create for our students are all linked to the curriculum. And in my particular role, we also have a research base behind that. So one of the challenges we faced was to ensure it was absolutely curriculum based, was absolutely linked to best practice research, and then have this flexible, adaptable component to these resources so that teachers could modify them to suit their students' circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I was just gonna ask like one more question real quick, but like understandably there's been a lot of focus on the curriculum for senior students especially, which makes sense because VCE and like the implications of that for our futures. But what sort of impacts do you, Nicola, and even Ayushi think this pandemic has had for the education of younger students as well, who, you know, education is equally as important? But yeah, I guess like curriculum changes and things like that have been really focused around senior students, but when it comes to delivery of content for younger students, what do you reckon the impacts have been?
I'm sorry, you just cut out a little bit. Can you just ask that again?
Sorry, I just said, what do you think the impacts have been for younger students?
Yeah, in the impacts on younger students have been really interesting because they rely so much on the socialization that happens at school. So if you think of a child in prep, he or she went to school for what, a couple of weeks, and then they were had to start learning at home, and suddenly this five-year-old had to work out, like, you know, they were so excited about starting school, and likewise a year seven student would have been so excited about starting secondary school. Mm-hmm. They get there for a few weeks and then were sent home, and suddenly they've got to navigate, work out how their parents or older siblings are going to help them out with their schoolwork. And so it's had a real social impact on all, especially younger students or students who are less independent with their own time and less time management. If they need more time management support, it's had a really big impact on students who need that extra layer of support that they normally get from school. So younger kids are a little bit confused by what school holidays mean and what learning at home means, because sometimes that's feeling a bit the same. but older students who are more independent and manage their time, they can compartmentalize into times. Mm-hmm. So the biggest impact is on the socialization. They're really missing their friends. I think parents are really understanding why school is a social construct and why we need people around us to enhance and enhance our learning, and the amount of, we're not just learning from teachers, we learn from each other all the time. So I think a lot of parents realize not only the role that the teachers play, but the role our peers play in our positive learning experiences as well.
That's actually a really interesting point, and like particularly like the social impacts relating to, I guess, mental health as well, particularly for younger students. Like I noticed, like my little cousins, they like not going crazy, but like they definitely need that kind of social interaction, which is definitely an interesting point.
They need the social interaction, they need the stimulation, they need the constant attention that a teacher pays, and that teacher asks them the right question at the right time to keep them on track and keep them interested and keep them curious. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the role that a teacher has. It's been unveiled, I guess, in this pandemic, when people realize that when that's taken away from a child's learning, that it does have some negative impact.
Yeah, well, Andrew, you're obviously a student in year 12. Did you kind of miss that class discussion?
Yeah, definitely. When remote learning hit, that discussion that we would usually have around subjects such as English, where you sort of discuss quite a bit, that kind of went out the window, because everyone might be sort of just not really in that same mood to discuss over remote learning. Some students might still be in bed, just logging in. And it's just not the same, unfortunately, as a real classroom discussion. And we did see that through a lot of subjects. And I think at one point, some of our teachers considered getting cricket sounds in whenever they asked questions, because nobody was answering anything.
Definitely. And like you do, I don't currently do maths, but you do two maths. How did you kind of find doing maths? So you spoke about doing English and how that was weird, like with in terms of class discussions, but how did you find doing maths? And obviously every kind of teacher did it differently, every kind of school, I guess, navigated this kind of process differently. But how did you find doing like a subject like maths online?
I feel like for maths, it's a bit more of an independent subject. You've got the ability to work at your own pace. There's not as much discussion compared to a subject like English. You can sort of reach out to your teachers or to your friends if you need help. But it's a pretty much set your own kind of adventure journey for maths, particularly at a VC level.
Amazing. So I reckon it's time for us to move into our next track, which is super exciting, but we'll see you back after the song. Hi there, you're back on Amplify on Spin, and we're in the middle of a really interesting discussion regarding COVID-19 and what the impact for the education sector has really been. But you're here with, I'm Alexa.
I'm Anika.
I'm Nicola.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Miyushi.
Let me start that again. As Alexa said before, we're having a really interesting discussion about COVID-19 and its effects on the education system. And Nicola, you were talking a bit before about equity and how your role making resources for primary school age children in the science kind of subject. You really had kept that in mind, the role of equity and the issue of equity. You kept that in mind. Do you want to kind of elaborate on that a bit more?
Sure. So from a resource development perspective, we considered equity a really strong driving principle that informed our work. We wanted to make sure that we were catering for every scenario and supporting teachers to cater for every scenario. For example, within one class, a teacher might be uploading expectations to an online platform. They also might be printing and posting those same learning experiences to families that had no internet access or very poor internet access. Mm-hmm. So teachers had to suddenly become aware of home situations in a way that they may not have been aware of prior. They may be aware of that already. So there was equity in terms of digital internet access. Yeah. There was equity in terms of interacting with resources. So we want families to interact with the resources in a way that best supports the students. So we support teachers to adapt resources so they can cater for all literacy levels within a household. So if a household has a large number of people for whom English is not a first language, but they're highly literate in their first language, we respect that and we cater for that. So we provide resources that they will be able to easily access so that they can help their students. Then there's also access to those resources. So, for example, not-for-profit resource development organisations will provide free resources for teachers, curriculum-linked, research-based, etc. We're aware that previously for-profit organisations were removing the fees so that teachers might be able to have access to more resources without the barrier of needing to provide funds for that. And then each, in terms of sharing those resources or publicising those resources, I know that lots of the State Department education, I'm aware that lots of the education departments at each state provided a curated list of resources that so that teachers could access the resources all in one place, and they were linking out to resources that they know work, that they know are research-based, and that they know that are flexible and adaptable. So there are lots of ways that equity could be catered for the teachers, for the schools, and for the students and their families.
There are lots of ways that you can, I guess, tackle equity. Actually going into this, I just thought of like the digital kind of perspective, but then you've opened my eyes to ways.
And then teachers were making sure that they heard from their students on a very regular basis, and they were on the phone on a really regular basis, so students could hear their teacher's voice or see them on the screen or read the teacher's words. Like, the teachers went above and beyond to make sure that their students still felt connected to them in their class.
And I guess on like a community basis, Andrew, like, how did you feel like you guys kind of, your school tackled, I guess, equity quite specifically, I guess, during this time?
I think similar to what Nicola was mentioning, we saw quite a lot of sort of reaching out from our school in terms of support, particularly when remote learning first began. Announcements that sort of went along with what the government was putting out in terms of loan devices, in terms of internet dongles for students in high school. Our school phoned all of the families that we had and checked in. Did they need anything? Did they need a device? Did they need an internet dongle? If they didn't have internet access, they were willing to post things out to students. Regular check-ins as well through our pastoral program. I think there was just a lot of communication which worked really, really well. Keeping everyone informed as best as possible really, really did help.
Yeah,
I think that's amazing. Definitely, like, communication has been so essential, I guess, between everyone, like, all kind of stakeholders in this situation. And Ayushi, I was, like, kind of just wondering, but from a VCAR perspective as well, like, equity is obviously super important, just with the way VC is set out, like, as a system as it is. And what has, like, VCAR really kept in mind with the, like, curriculum changes and things that it's had to make?
Yeah, so it was one of the things that was brought up every single meeting, which was, you know, equity and ensuring that there's a lot of different issues, you know, some that are recent, some that are continuous and may have just been heightened in this time, like the disparity between rural and metro areas has always been a discussion. And then in this time, you have even more isolation in rural areas than you do now. So things like that we discussed in every meeting, and as well as, you know, the online digital disparity between certain communities. Also, like Nicola mentioned, the sort of cultural impacts where your home, your upbringing, the languages you speak, what jobs your parents have, all of that makes a difference to what kind of environment you have at home that can sort of be cohesive for learning or not. You know, you have to take into account things like, you know, some people might not be completely comfortable with their parents, might not have a good relationship. So you lack that comfortable atmosphere that schools provide. So we did talk about a lot of these things, and a lot of it's kind of a case-to-case basis. So depending on which sort of schools we're dealing with, we take it into account at that level. So whatever is sort of at a state level was announced by the premier, but whatever we sort of dealt with individually, we take it in by calls, by queries, by teachers. And we've had resources, and we've had just a page with questions that we've been updating every week. Sort of just hearing people out, I think, is the most important thing, so that we can make changes accordingly.
So have you guys been in direct contact with actual, say, principals for schools or things like that?
Not me per se, but as a board we have definitely. Every time there's a new update, we've been sending, and the CEO has been sending principals letters and updates with the new rules, the new classifications for SACs and all of that. So what I think we all acknowledge we need to work on in future is more direct communication with students, which is what I advocate for. But I think there was a lot of communication with principals and with teachers on that level as well. Especially we had teacher forums, kind of like a discussion, I think every week or so there was a questionnaire sort of time where you could ask questions as a teacher. So we did try to take that into account, but definitely we kept on tabs for media too, and even VC discussion page, funnily enough. That came up there, we were not in a creepy way watching, but more out of concern. Okay, we were trying to hear the most popular opinions and how we could adapt our changes. So those are things we were doing, but definitely I personally think that we have room for improvement, and hopefully after this sort of pandemic time is the time for growth, I think, for all sectors, at all levels, teacher, student. After this sort of patching of fires and everything calms down, we really have a time to stop and think, look, what did work and what didn't work, and what clearly do we have to work on in the future? So I think that will be a more important time, actually, once all this COVID sort of moves past. Yeah.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree with you, Ayushi. If we go back to what was before, I think it would be such a shame, because we've learned so much about schools and teachers. We've learned so much about teachers that learned more about their students, and the students have learned more about their teachers because they've seen inside their home via video online classes. You know, just that we've learned so much about each other and our society. And I think that if we don't come out of this in a more positive way for schools and students, I think that would be such a shame.
Yeah.
And I think as well, one of the biggest takeaways that we've seen is how possible learning from home actually is.
Yeah.
There's been quite a lot of discussion around actually looking at, is it possible to maybe do remote learning for a portion of the week and having learning on site for the other portion of the week. So I think that's also an interesting takeaway.
Yeah.
And I hope that can be done at an individual student level, because some students will thrive in the at-home environment and some other students would prefer or thrive in a more social and interconnected environment. So I really hope that schools can take that on at an individual student level. If that's possible, that would be amazing.
I think, yeah, what we really saw at a VCAR level was this sort of rigidity in the learning, just because of the way that VCAR's been running for years and years and decades now. This rigidity in how SACs were meant to come out. A lot of schools were like, nope, we have to do it as a test. We don't know how else to do it. This is just the way we've always done it. So there was a lot of VCAR trying to console them, like, no, it could be anything. You could do a poster, you could do research. It doesn't have to. What we wanted to ensure, and the word we always said in our meetings, was continuity of learning. Yeah. Okay, we didn't want to focus on testing. We just wanted the students to learn at this stage. The exams itself are for testing. The SACs are not actually for testing. They are for learning purposes. So whether it was a research project or a test, it shouldn't really have mattered. But I think that is something that we have to take into account as well in the future, how we deliver SACs and making sure that it is a bit more open so that teachers don't feel sort of narrow, that this is the only option to ensure that we can sort of test our students' skills or see where they're at. I think that is one thing that we have definitely noticed we need to work on.
Yeah, and it's interesting you're actually bringing this up. We ran into one of our family friends yesterday, and we're having this conversation because she's got a son who's my age, in year 12, and he actually participated in, and I'm not quite sure about what you did, Andrew or Alexa even, like in terms of how you did if you did any SACs during isolation period or home learning, or if you waited, if your school waited to go back to school and then kind of tackled them all there. But this particular family friend that we were talking to, she was saying that, yeah, like my son, he did quite a few SACs at home. And so I think just going back to like that equity, that idea of equity, because personally at our school, we had like a SAC week, which was broken up during the long weekend. So when we returned back to school, we caught up on like a few SACs that we'd missed out on. But in terms of like doing kind of SACs online and authenticating them, how could that be tackled? How have you kind of looked at that from like an equitable kind of perspective, Ayushi?
Well, from my experience as a university student as well, it's possible. Okay, we've done our exams online, we've done our assignments online. So it's really just about when you're forced to be adaptable, you just have to be adaptable. There is always things like, you know, you might not be able to do a test, but that's what we need to emphasize, that SACs are not meant for testing, they are meant for continuity of learning and ensuring that students are aware of what they know and what they don't. So in all honesty, something like a research project could reach far beyond even what a test could reach, because the students are putting in more hours to stabilize their learning. They're putting in more hours to research a bit of specifics about that topic. So this idea that you need tests, I know for my school back in high school, I can imagine that they were very like, we need tests to verify. I don't think that that is the case, because even with research-based projects, you can see where they're at and actually see perhaps even a better representation of how much students are capable of learning when they have their books and what they really understand based on compared to what they've memorized and regurgitated, which is really important. So when you adapt your SACs, then the authentication also adapts. So it's what we need to understand, it's not an exam. That wasn't actually the purpose of these assessments.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Did you in terms of I guess like assessing kind of younger students, Nicola, did you guys kind of take the same approach as well also?
Yeah, especially with regards to students in the younger years, there's a really flexible approach taken to assessment. So other than NAPLAN, there's not a strong emphasis on testing. We look at the student at where they're at and what they can, how they represent an idea, and whether that's with words or pictures or making a model or creating something that represents their understanding. then the teacher takes all of that into consideration. So a sit-down test is really it doesn't suit the younger students all the time, but at the same time, we need to prepare them for what happens in secondary school. And so we work up towards that so that they're prepared for all sorts of situations. So I think one of the things we learn in this isolation period is that to continue that frame of mind and be more open-minded about what we can use for student assessments. So we take the students where they're at, like I said, and what was missing though is the teacher's access to the students in real time. So to watch them think through an idea, to watch them make those connections, to ask the right question at the right time, to catch them and develop that idea further with the student. And so we had to be a bit more open because we lost the opportunity to make those connections with the student in real time. We had to be a bit more flexible and a bit more open-minded about what the students were sending in from their home learning environment.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And I think these like conversations, like you mentioned, about equity, creativity, open-mindedness, and that like real like adaptability kind of aspect of education are things that hopefully will be going forward into the future. And I guess that's what we'll be talking about next, a bit about like the implications for the future. But before that, I think it's time for a little fun break. You're here on Amplify on Spin. I'm Alexa.
I'm Anika.
And we're joined by Andrew, Nicola, and Ayushi here. Let's get right into this song.
Killer track, and you're back here on Amplify. My name's Anika, and I'm joined by Alexa, Nicola, Ayushi, and Andrew, and we're talking all things COVID-19 and education. We're having some really interesting discussions. There's been a lot going on recently this year, but what we want to know from you guys is, what do you think will happen in the future? Nicola, we might start with you. In terms of what do you think the implications, I guess, of this pandemic will kind of affect us as a society and us as an education system in Australia, I guess, as going into the future?
Yeah, I think like we said before, we've done a lot of learning and we're still in that process of learning. And I think I'm really curious to see what changes will be made with respects to different digital solutions for teachers and students and families. I think the role of schools might change. They've always been working towards being more of a community hub, and I wonder if that will be accelerated because we recognize the importance and the role of schools in a community. I wonder about building on that, I wonder about the how teachers will maintain the sense of community and belonging within a class or within a cohort of students if we come in and out of lockdown over the next few months. Hopefully this is the last one, but if we do again, like maintaining that sense of community, because that's what schools are about. We're not just about transmitting learning from one textbook to a student or one teacher to a student. It is a community. It is a community of learning. And so how that is translated and transformed into the future, I think, will be really important. I think there's a new respect for schools and a respect for teachers and a respect for the way students learn today. You know, the way students learn today is not the way that their parents learnt and their grandparents learnt. And so there's a new wondering about the role of schools and teachers, because teaching and education is developing and changing all the time. We are keeping up with research. We are keeping up with best practice. And I think this awareness that's been created by bringing the learning into the home will transform what people think and what the community think of schools and teachers and learning. So that's really exciting, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's very like futuristic when you think about it. Like we're living through like this really crazy period of history that we'll kind of look back on, and it will be very influential in terms of I guess where we have to go, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which is really exciting. But just talking about like community in school going forward, Andrew, like you guys have done a lot of things at your school to kind of maintain that community this year. How do you think that kind of approach will influence like you guys in the future?
I think the community approach that we've been looking at will sort of start to diversify in terms of what we're able to do, both on a physical platform as well as a digital platform. All the events that you might normally see partake at a school might be diversified, they might change, there might be some new ones added. And I think there's, as Nicola mentioned, there'll be a greater shift towards adapting as well to all the stuff that we've seen, even with regards to learning, adapting to all the needs of each student, the flexibility that schools offer, as well as teachers as well. I think will be looked at quite extensively to make sure that every student is able to learn the best way that they can, whether that be at home or whether that be in the classroom or a mix. And I think as well, if anything, let's hope not, but if anything does come back like this again, to an extent, that we'll be prepared and that that continuity of learning, continuity of learning will continue.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think that we'll get to a stage where maybe we may do a few days at school and a few days at home?
There have been some discussions around that. And I think, as Nicola mentioned before as well, that would probably suit some students. But I think we need to keep in mind that there are students who solely prefer just being in the classroom, and there are other students who thrive completely at home. So mm-hmm. I think there are some discussions that need to be taken into account in terms of what we can actually look at for future learning. That also includes assessments that are run, because I know that people do see SACs on a student level as tests. Even when teachers try to sort of change them up a little bit, they still end up being similar to what an exam would look like. So it's interesting to hear that SACs weren't actually created that way. So I think that will also be looked at as well for future.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess I was just going to ask Ayushi a question about when it came to changing study designs for VCA, but also VC and things like prerequisites for university that students have to undertake for certain courses, and whether you think that will have really an impact just more in the near future, I guess, before students who have gone under an adaptive study design for prerequisite subjects.
Yeah, look, we have had ample discussion with the community sector. Again, VCAR doesn't control universities as well, which is another reason why it was really important for us to give an ATAR, because if you didn't, there was no guarantee that universities would still take you in, because that's a different division. So, but we have had extensive communication, especially there have been, first of all, communication between all every week, or I think it's monthly, the CEOs of every jurisdiction across Australia for education mm-hmm. have been calling and sort to try and have a more coherent together sort of decision making up towards COVID. So there's not this sort of state to state disparity on how we're tackling education, and also communication between the university and year 12 sectors, 100%. So we've been talking to them, and universities have been pretty open. They want students, they need students. So a lot of students, a lot of universities have said, look, just tell us what you need. We'll be more than happy to adjust our rankings or adjust our intake to compensate for that. So I really appreciate that they have been very open. And I think that's best for all parties. They understand that students have been disrupted. And we will try to create an ATAR that is representative of that. And universities will try to be a bit more lenient and take into account the several, mental health factors that could have implicated those scores as well. So there has been discussion, which is good. And I think all that students, and I want to reassure Andrew and Anika that everyone's doing their best to ensure that you get into uni. No one wants to fail. That's not the case. Everyone in every sector is really trying hard to make sure you get into your course you want and you're not disadvantaged. And yes, just reassure yourself that it's all right. We're not against you.
That's very reassuring. Thank you, Aisha. That's good. And it's interesting. I'm just wondering, do you guys have much, you spoke about how you've got like, I guess, a diverse kind of range, I guess, of voices contributing to lots of your meetings and lots of your discussions. Do you have one that specifically or kind of equivalently university kind of is, or how does that kind of work?
Yeah. So we have people on the board as well who work as university professors and are also as part of, for example, we have representatives from Monash University and other universities within Victoria. So there is a very nice representation from the university sector, the principal sector. I think the student voice sector can grow a little bit. It's a bit lonesome there so far, but we'll get there. But there is representation across the board in terms of ensuring that we communicate with primary student sector as well. So we have a few teachers and educators in that realm. So there is links. That's what we try to do, create links so that we are reaching different niches. I think with prerequisite subjects, like Alexa mentioned, again, universities are just taking that into account. And I think next year, I'm not sure if you know, but universities will most likely start slightly later to take into account the delayed ATAR release. So, so they'll take that into account, and I'm sure they'll modify any of their course content that might have presumed some knowledge that might have been cut out from the study designs. So they will take more care with things like that. And I think, leniency is really all we wanted, reassurance from the universities, and they're there to support us, which is great news.
You spoke about how you guys you think that you need a little bit more student voice and a bit more kind of, I guess, primary kind of voice. How do you think that COVID has kind of opened VCAR's eyes to that?
I think we do have representation in terms of primary sector, but I think COVID has really shown VCAR how important it is also to have a direct link with students, which is why we've been relying on, watching sort of media outlets and discussions online, so we can just gain some insight. And I think that's something we need to work on. I think we all recognize it. And that's what I'm sort of there for, to advocate that we increase this link. And so VCAR doesn't seem like a scary entity to students and actually someone who wants to help them. Because I remember sitting in year 12 thinking, oh my God, they just hate us. They're just against us, that's not the case. And I think there is a lot that we need to work on in terms of creating that link between students and the actual VCAR organization, which we do at a teacher level, but it's not quite the same. And we can't assume that what teachers feel is the same as what students feel. So definitely something we need to increase is direct student feedback.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That is very interesting. On that note, let's get into our next track of the show. We've had some really good discussions, talking all things the future of education, and how COVID's kind of really impacted that. Hearing from some wonderful individuals, Nicola, Ayushi, and Andrew. My name's Anika. I'm joined by my co-author, Alexa.
And let's get right into the next track. Welcome back to Amplify on Sin. We've been having some really insightful discussions on today's show about COVID-19 and its impact on education. I'm Alexa.
I'm Anika.
I'm Nicola.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Ayushi.
And awesome. Unfortunately, that seems to be all we have time for today. But look, these discussions have been really entertaining, interesting, really informative as well. And if you want to catch up on this conversation and re-listen to anything, make sure to check the podcast in our bio on our Instagram at AmplifySpin. And same if you want to hear any of the tracks that we played on today's show again. But Anika, do you have anything to add?
Just thank you so much for joining our conversation, guys. This has been really insightful, and we really appreciate all your perspectives. It's been really cool. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. And that's a wrap. Be sure to head to our Instagram at AmplifySin and find all the cool stuff in there. But for now, we'll give you a final goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.